This Biz News Briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees.
It's Monday, the 25th of November, and this is your Biz News Briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. Well, news out of the US that US President-elect Trump has named Scott Bessent, hedge fund manager Scott Bessent, as his choice for US Treasury Secretary. And that has US markets in a rally. We did see the markets in the US close firmer on Friday, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average hitting a new all-time record on Friday. And in early open, we saw the Dow Jones almost 1% stronger. We saw the NASDAQ 0.5% to the positive, S&P 500 0.2% to the positive. And Bitcoin is bouncing all over the place. In fact, just an update subsequent to this $95,000 level, it's currently tracking at around $97,500. That $100,000 level almost in sight. It's flirting with that level, and we'll see perhaps that announcement of President-elect Trump's choice for U.S. Secretary or U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent will push it through this evening. We'll be chatting to Fazam Ehsani, the CEO of Valor, later in the program. But looking at the local market today, a totally different picture. The JSE, a top 40 index, down almost 1%. Resources coming down hard, 2.75% almost lower. That on the back of gold falling again in light of Trump's appointment or Trump's choice for Treasury Secretary being Scott Bessent. Industrials slightly flatter, financials down 0.75%. And the Rand dollar is at 18.04, Rand pound 22.68. On the upside on the market, WeBuyCars in with another strong showing, that company out with results recently, almost 4.5% stronger. Telkom looking 2.25% to the positive. Richemont almost 2% to the upside. And Glencore 1.75% stronger. On the downside, it was the gold stocks being hit hard as gold comes under pressure. Harmony almost 7% down. Implats falling over 7%. Goldfields almost 5% to the negative. And Sibanye also giving up almost 5%. We'll be watching that Bitcoin story unfold. I spoke to Fazam Ehsani, the CEO and co-founder of Valor, on his thoughts on where the digital currency can actually go. Brace yourself. $899,000 is not off the table.
Really, my view is that this is just a milestone on a much larger ascent of what I believe will be one of the most valuable assets that humanity has ever known. And if you look at the market price of gold, the market capitalization of gold, and if you were to say that Bitcoin and gold would meet market cap parity, that would imply a market cap of or a price per Bitcoin of about $899,000. But as you and I know, things that are digital, that have the beautiful qualities of the digital realm where they can be transferred instantaneously at very low cost, and with Bitcoin maintaining its scarcity, I think there's a good chance that it goes way, way higher than that, but with a lot of volatility in between. So I think we are on a journey. Price will go up, price will come down. It doesn't change the fundamentals of what this asset class promises to humanity to really revolutionize its financial system.
Let's explore the volatility a little more, because do we anticipate that it can come all the way back down to $17,000, $16,000? I mean, is that the level of volatility we need to be able to stomach?
You know, historically, we were talking about, you know, in the early days, let's say, you know, a couple of years into Bitcoin's birth, say in the, you know, 2011, 2012-ish, you know, you would see, you know, pullbacks of 95% sometimes. In some cases, it was a 99% pullback. More recently, the most you know, let's say in the last 5-6 years, we've seen pullbacks of, let's say, 85%. The last pullback was maybe about 80%. But I think we're talking about a different narrative right now. We're talking about, you know, the superpower of the world, still the United States of America, talking about creating a Bitcoin strategic reserve. We're talking about presidential candidates in Poland that are promising that if they get elected, they will also institute a Bitcoin strategic reserve for their country. We're talking about China, who up until very recently was banning cryptocurrencies. A court just came out in the last 48 hours to talk about how owning cryptocurrency and Bitcoin is not illegal at all. In fact, it's legal for the Chinese to hold Bitcoin, which is changes in narrative. We're talking about, you know, the largest institutions offering ETFs, you can go into your brokerage account in the United States and buy. We're talking about the highest and the fastest growing ETF in history being the Bitcoin ETFs, right? Which actually, your viewers don't know, number one is that the valuation of Bitcoin right now has exceeded the valuation of global supplies of silver. So it's more valuable than silver. And then on top of that, it's actually larger than the assets under management of the gold ETF in the United States. This is the BlackRock ETF of gold versus the BlackRock ETF of Bitcoin. It's now larger. The BlackRock ETF of gold is 19 years old. The BlackRock ETF of Bitcoin is less than a year old. So we're talking about shifts in kind of mindsets and in viewing this asset. A few years ago, this was the asset that was behind all the illicit activity of the world, you know, which was a wrong narrative, a false narrative. Now we're talking about an asset that's a hedge against inflation, that could be a potential replacement of gold, a potential replacement for treasuries as a safe haven. So I think pullbacks of 85%, are they possible? Absolutely. And I expect pullbacks to happen. But I think the trajectory is up and to the right.
No, Stafford Marcy has spoken to me about stacking. And he explained this concept as keep buying, right? And yes, stacking your portfolio, my little tiny Bitcoin portfolio as it stands. Do you also advocate in favor of that strategy, i.e. it's different to taking profits right now?
Correct. So I think, a couple of things. Number one is we're living in a very unequal world where there are people that have discretionary income and people that don't have discretionary income. I would not advise people to go and buy Bitcoin if they are saving to pay their rent in a few days or their healthcare bills in the next couple of months. I think that would be unwise. With the volatility, they could be doing very, very well. They could also be losing a lot of money and not being able to pay their bills. So that's the first point. The second point, if you do have discretionary money, the question I have is if you're selling Bitcoin at 100,000 for rands or for US dollars, what are you doing with those rands and US dollars? Are you going to be holding them in rands and US dollars over the next 10 years and hoping that that asset will appreciate? Are you trying to buy treasuries, which have had a real yield of negative 5% over the last few years? So my point of view is if you've got a long-term horizon, 5 years, 10 years, I don't think there are many assets in the world that can promise anywhere near the anticipated returns of Bitcoin. So if you're trying to take some money off the table because you have immediate expenses or you need to do something with the money, absolutely. But if you don't know what you're going to be doing and you're still looking at your capital as an investment vehicle, my question to you is, what else are you putting it in? If you don't have a good answer, better to keep it in Bitcoin.
And buy more.
And buy more as well. I think one has to be careful, right? The volatility is always there. It's easy to have these conversations at 100,000 US dollars or close to 100,000 US dollars or 1.8 million rand. We're just shy of 1.8 million rand per Bitcoin right now. Without doubt, we'll see the volatility. The thesis has never been to change. I mean, the same thesis I've been sharing with you since it was, you know, a few thousand US dollars. So as I said, I think there is space for diversification, but you need to understand the pros and the cons and what you may be giving up by diversifying outside of Bitcoin.
Message coming through loud and clear there. Don't underestimate the volatility from a cryptocurrency perspective. You can catch that full interview with Fazam Ehsani, who is the CEO and co-founder of Valor, at 7 o'clock tonight on BizNews TV. Now, Netcare came out with results today, and that was for the 12 months to the end of September. A strong showing despite a challenging environment, but the market didn't take kindly to those results, almost 2% lower on the day, despite an increase in dividend. I spoke to Dr. Richard Friedland, the CEO of Netcare, earlier and got his take on the results and also his take on NHI and whether it could potentially break South Africa in its current form.
It was a particularly challenging year for us, both from a macroeconomic perspective and where we find ourselves in healthcare. And so the first 6 months, we saw volumes down. A lot was seasonal because of Easter. And we had a very good recovery into the second half of the year. We've still been able to pay out an exceptional dividend, over 61% of our headline earnings per share or profits. We were able to pay back to shareholders, 1.6 billion in both share buybacks and dividends over this period without really impacting the amount of debt on our balance sheet. It only increased by 278 million. We kept our debt to EBITDA levels at 1.2. So a very strong operating performance. We showed good operating leverage. And overall, we were pleased with the results.
Talk to me about the outlook and whether you believe we're going to remain in this constrained environment despite some forward-looking reprieve on interest rates.
I think that sentiment has definitely changed. I don't think most people saw a government of national unity as an alternative to a coalition or an outright majority. And I think that the sentiment in our country has certainly changed, and we're seeing that and change for the better. We haven't seen the fundamentals follow yet. And so we're hopeful that they will do so. I think healthcare is always a late cycle beneficiary. It'll take time for the healthcare benefits to come through. And obviously, in terms of medical aid membership, that's directly proportional to the number of formerly employed South Africans. So we've got to get the economy going.
Richard, early September, you spoke to my colleague Alec Hogg, and you chatted about NHI and the Hospital Association of South Africa. I see in your verbiage today on your results release, you still stand by the statements as an aggregate that the legality and the feasibility of NHI is still very much in dispute. And further, you have commented that there is collaboration, better collaboration with the public sector. If I can just get your update on that front.
Well, I think since the 1st of September, when we launched that proposal at HASA, we have been invited through BUSA, that's Business Unity South Africa, to discuss our concerns and potentially put a proposal on the table. BUSA has tabled that to the president directly in the first week of November, and we're waiting a response. And Bronwyn, we see it very simply as this. We've got a very binary choice. We can take the low road and meet in court and drag this process out for 5 to 10 years, and there are no winners. Well, the president can galvanize the private sector, its resources, its knowledge, its expertise, and most importantly, its willingness. And we can together solve the problems in South Africa. We can't wait another 10 years to address the inequities and differences in healthcare. We need those solutions, and we need them now. We think there are a number of initiatives that we can help with as the private sector. And I don't mean that in a patronizing way, but I think there's a greater collaboration between public and private. Having said that, there are fundamental concerns about the NHI Act that will need to be addressed through amendments. Some have chosen to go to court. We as HASA have held back. We're awaiting a response from the president, really, as to whether there's a door that's been opened or not.
In its current form, do you believe NHI would break South Africa?
We cannot afford to tax more people. We've reached the absolute pinnacle of that Laffer curve. And that Laffer curve teaches us or shows us that actually, the more you increase taxes, actually, paradoxically, the less you collect because people start avoiding paying. And we're at the very peak of that curve at the moment. So the funding of what is being conceived within the NHI needs to be unpacked in detail. And there are far more rational ways of achieving what government wants to do. And we believe there are solutions to this.
It was Dr. Richard Friedland, the CEO of Netcare, and he has in fact extended his time at the helm of Netcare from September 2024 for another six-month period. We're 2 months already into that because Netcare has named an external successor. We don't have word on who that is, but certainly the delay in terms of the announcement is because the external successor is not yet ready to take on that position. Right, so that was Netcare, as I said, reporting its results for the 12 months to the end of September. Not a bad result, despite the challenging period, as well as upping their dividend. But the market, as I said, marking that stock off, down almost 2% lower on the day. Now, last week, the South African Reserve Bank cut interest rates by 25 basis points. And the key is, of course, as we move into the festive season, for the consumer not to get overly excited about the depth and extent of this down cycle in interest rates, because the South African Reserve Bank is taking a very cautious approach, given the uncertainty in the global environment. I caught up with Kevin Lings, chief economist at StanLib, to get his view on the South African Reserve Bank's stance on interest rates as we come up to December, that festive season, and we open up our wallets.
Very, very conservative approach to setting monetary policy. And they feel that internationally, there is now a more conservative approach. They meet regularly with the Bank of International Settlements and the other central banks. They engage with the Federal Reserve. So they've got a good idea of what the European Central Bank, what the Federal Reserve Bank of England are thinking under current circumstances. And their message back to us is, we need to be very cautious. But think about how cautious they are being, because you've got an inflation rate of 2.8%. That's incredibly low. You've got the Reserve Bank saying that inflation over the next 6-8 months is going to remain below 4%. That's their own forecast. And under those circumstances, they didn't even consider 50 basis points. They said they didn't even talk about it. So under what circumstances would they consider? Well, clearly, under no circumstances, because this is as good as it gets in terms of a reason to be more aggressive on interest rate cuts. That tells you this is a group of guys that don't want to take much risk. They want to be purposely conservative. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to unsettle the currency. They don't want any of that aggravation. Business as usual, steady cuts, and ensure that they give the market what the market expects.
So bottom line, don't expect a fast down-cutting cycle for South African interest rates. Every Sunday night, Chris Steyn, BizNews' Chris Steyn, speaks to United Independent Movement leader Neil De Beer and gets his take on the political environment, the economic environment. Neil was particularly outspoken this Sunday. Here's a snippet from that interview on how much secrets mean in the world of politics. Let's take a look.
But just going back to Zuma's time in intelligence, Neil, he must be sitting on every dirty little secret of every politician of note in this country, and is choosing perhaps not to use it in any overt manner. Who do you think is the politician who holds the most aces when it comes to the dirty secrets department?
I think definitely Jacob. I mean, he was in the ANC, one of the people spearheading intelligence. He was trained by the foreign apparatus. And no doubt, you know, people say that the man might not have a school degree, but he is streetwise. And that is why he always uses the security conclave and the intelligence scenario. And that's why he's always one ahead. So if you look at world leaders that come from the intelligence services, one of the most dramatic is Vladimir Putin, who was ex-head of the KGB. people that come out of intelligence are trained to always have connections everywhere. But there's another person, I must tell you, in my opinion, that carried state secrets as well. And that was Peggy Tele.
I wanted to ask you.
Carried dockets on everybody. And that is what made him a dangerous man. And that's why, in my opinion, allegedly, we could not bloody get rid of him. Because it was the scenario of, if you do that, then I will do that. So, having people with such power, you know, I call it the J. Edgar Hoover syndrome. One of the most powerful people in America was J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI. He could manipulate and destroy presidents. And we have them here. We have them in us. And it's a form of politics. It's a form of this dirty thing called politics. But it is so obvious now that this game is being played. And if you want to be on the same level, you will have to counter it. And I'm sorry, I don't think there's people that can counter NK at this moment on that deep, dark level.
Always a blockbuster interview between Chris Stein and Neil De Beer, leader of the United Independent Movement. You can catch that full interview on BizNews TV. Well, that's almost the end of tonight's BizNews briefing. Just a reminder that you can catch that full interview with Fazam Ehsani, the CEO and co-founder of Valor, at 7 o'clock tonight on BizNews TV. And Netcare CEO Richard Friedland up at 8 o'clock this evening. That's full interview. Alec, back in the hot seat tomorrow at 6 o'clock.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.